up? Welcome to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd here, solo for the first hour. Drancer will be by at noon. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. I am live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And of course, 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The text line already starting to fill up. And man, we got a lot to get to just in this first segment here, because of course it is another Canucks playoff game day, game five at Rogers Arena between the Canucks and the Oilers. Series knotted at two. A pivotal, I believe is what we're supposed to call it. Pivotal game five tonight going at Rogers Arena. We got lineup changes to discuss after the Canucks took the ice at Rogers Arena for their morning skate today. Excited to get into that. Halford and Brough cooking up something special for the game, or trying to get something going for the game tonight at Rogers. So we'll talk about that in a little bit here as well. But I want to start it off just with a vibe check. Where's your head at? Where are your emotions? Where's your heart at ahead of game five? This is a big one, right? Biggest game since at Rogers Arena, since game seven of the Stanley Cup final in 2011, right? The chance to take a 3-2 series lead, to push Edmonton to the brink of elimination, to push yourself to the brink of advancing to the conference finals for the first time also, of course, in 13 years. Are you more nervous? You more excited? What are you feeling ahead of this one? And, you know, after game four, we all kind of did the caveat of, hey, it's 2-2, and, you know, you would have taken that at the beginning of the year, the beginning of the series. And I don't think that eliminates the frustration of the performance or the effort in game four from the Canucks, which was obviously not sufficient, not what you wanted to see. But I do think now that we've had a little bit of time to digest game four, to react to it, and start looking ahead to this one, if you take a step back and just think where this team is right now, the opportunity they have in front of them, this is what we've been waiting for. And so I understand the nerves. I understand if you're pessimistic, if you're concerned. It's always tough coming off a loss in the playoffs. But these are the games that this city, that this fan base, that us in the media have been waiting for. Nights like tonight. And I think overwhelmingly we should be excited about this one. Yeah, there's always going to be nerves. There's always going to be that trepidation. I get it. But these are the opportunities that the athletes crave. These are the opportunities, the moments, the nights that I think fans of hockey crave as well. They can beat the Oilers. I'm not saying it's going to be easy. It's definitely not. Do they need to play much better? Yeah, they absolutely do. But the opportunity is right there in front of them, and I think that should be very exciting for the players. I think that should be very, very exciting for the fans going into this one in Game 5 as well. So, obviously, all of yesterday, right? Because we heard a very, very frustrated, very blunt Rick Tocchet after game four on Tuesday night, alluded to, you know, the passengers can't win with 12 guys. Do these guys, are they aware of it? It's the Stanley Cup playoffs. Also said, yeah, we're going to be looking at some lineup changes. We're going to have to be thinking about some lineup changes. And so the big question all of yesterday was, what cards does Rick Tocchet play? What buttons does he push? As we all know, Rick Tocchet's a big puzzle guy. The big round table guy as well. So would him and the coaches gather around the round table, throw those puzzle pieces out there, see what they could come up with, see how they could jumble them around a little bit and come up with a different, more pleasing picture than what was out there in game four. Now, interestingly, yesterday when we heard from Rick Tocchet, kind of suggested, you know what, as much as I need to do a different, we need to do a different look here, we need to make some changes. He also suggested he didn't want to break up his top two lines, the Miller line, the Lindholm line. Well, I guess he had a second thoughts, change of heart overnight for Rick Tocchet, because at morning skate today, here is how the Canucks lined up. So he did keep the Miller line together, Miller, Besser, and Suter. No surprise there. That's been their most consistently strong line throughout the postseason. Obviously, the chemistry between Miller and Besser is significant. Suter has really found his spot, chipping in on that line as well. After that, however, Teddy Bluger back skating between Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. So the kind of vintage classic third line reunited, although now skating as the second line in the top six officially at Morning Skate at Rogers Arena. So Bluger back with Joshua and Garland. Elias Lindholm with Nils Höglander. And Elias Pettersson on the wing skating with Elias Lindholm and Nils Höglander. And then your fourth line is Nils Amon, Phil DiGiuseppe, who comes back in after missing a game for personal reasons, and Vasily Podkolzin, who's going to get his first taste of NHL playoff action, or looks set to get his first taste of NHL playoff action tonight against the Oilers. So that means on the outside looking in, you've got Linus Karlsson, who played the last two games. Ilya Mikheyev is a healthy scratch. We all know his struggles to impact the game. The defensive side of it started to slip in game four as well. And as I said on the show yesterday, at that point, what's the argument for keeping Ilya Mikheyev in? Even if you just get him out to try to give him that reset, to try to give him that mental break, it was very, very difficult for me to see the reasoning behind keeping Ilya Mikheyev in. So he's a healthy scratch, or set to be a healthy scratch. Sam Lafferty also, and a lot of that same logic that I'm talking about with Ilya Mikheyev applies to Sam Lafferty. What's the role? What's the impact that he's having? It's hard to see out there on a game-to-game basis. So Karlsson, Mikheyev, Sam Lafferty set to be the healthy scratches at forward. And of course, there was some conversation about what would happen on the blue line as well. Now, I didn't think this one was as much of a challenge for Rick Tocchet. I know with all the attention, the negative attention focused on Ian Cole, it still seemed pretty obvious that you keep him into the lineup. And that's exactly what they look poised to do. Hughes, Hronek, Susie Myers, Zadorov, Cole on the blue line, Friedman, and Noah Juulsen as the healthy scratches. So it looks like Juulsen set to come back out after coming into the lineup one game. Of course, with Carson Soucy returning from his one-game suspension. So there you go. And those are fairly significant changes, especially considering that Rick Tocchet, by his own account, was very, very reluctant to touch the top two lines, touch the Lindholm line or the Miller line. He ends up doing just that. And I think this makes a ton of sense. If you felt like you needed a change, something very similar to this was always going to be the most similar option. And I think one key here, we'll talk about the Pettersson side of things, Nils Höglander getting back in, all of that in just a second. But I think one thing that makes this work is the ability to elevate Teddy Bluger in the lineup. Because Teddy Bluger's been playing on the fourth line, and so he's been very kind of not front of mind, not in the spotlight, because he's playing fourth line. It's hard to really stand out in that role. But it's also been very clear to me that when you consider his work on the penalty kill, just his overall game, his overall defensive responsibility, Teddy Bluger clearly not one of those passengers that Rick Tocchet is worried about. Clearly one of the 12 guys who's going that Rick Tocchet, you know, says they need more of. And I think the fact that Bluger's capable of doing that, the fact that he has playoff experience, allows you to bump him up in the lineup. And that gives you the flexibility to do a whole bunch of other different things. And of course, it doesn't hurt that you're not just elevating Teddy Bluger in the lineup, you're putting him back with two line mates that he had a ton of success with in the regular season. And again, as much as the Lindholm-Joshua Garland line has produced, and it felt like, hey, you're taking Garland and Joshua, who are so strong together, and you're replacing Teddy Bluger with a, you know, former 40 goal scorer, Selke candidate, that's just going to, you know, attach a rocket ship to that line, basically. They've scored a lot, but it hasn't necessarily happened in terms of those, that ability to drive play consistently, like we saw so frequently with Teddy Bluger playing between those two. So yes, you're moving Lindholm away from them and you're bumping Teddy Bluger up. And in a vacuum, you'd say Lindholm was the more skilled, more dangerous offensive player. But for whatever reason, Joshua and Garland had way more success driving play consistently, albeit in the regular season. So, you know, not in the same circumstances in the playoffs, not against the same quality of competition. They had a lot more success doing that with Bluger in the middle than they did with Elias Lindholm. So you're hoping to get some of that consistent shift-to-shift work, production, possession back from that line. I think that's a huge key for Rick Tocchet and being able to do this kind of shuffle. And then on the third line, Elias Lindholm still playing at center. And of course, you go back to when they acquired him and there was some talk, okay, hey, this is a guy you can move around the lineup. You can do some different things with. You can play him at wing. I think Rick Tocchet decided pretty quickly that actually, no, we really like Lindholm at center. We like what he gives us down the middle. So Lindholm stays at center. and he's going to be between Nils Höglander, who comes back in, and Elias Pettersson. Now, Nils Höglander, Jansen and I were talking about on the show yesterday. Yes, he's really struggled in the playoffs. You also need a guy who can finish. You need a guy who can give you some offense at 5-on-5. Nils Höglander, clearly the best option. 24 goals at even strength in the regular season. You have to bet on him to turn his game around at some point. And then Elias Pettersson. And the big thing here to me is just a different look, a different spot. Change something with Pettersson. Last game, he started with Ilya Mikheyev and Sam Lafferty. Those guys are both out of the lineup now. Now, yes, he has played with Nils Höglander, but going with two brand new line mates from the last couple of games, I think makes a ton of sense given just how much of a slog, how much of a struggle. I mean, we heard it. That guy is going through it. Give him anything new to grab onto, anything new to focus on and feel like, okay, I can have success in this spot. And of course, a big part of that is moving him to the wing. Now, I don't think you can generally look at Elias Pettersson and say he's been defensively suspect in these playoffs. You know, we can have the debate about the Ryan Nugent-Hopkins goal in Game 4. I think that was a bad play by him in the neutral zone. Drantz disagrees. That's fine. Generally, though, he's been very, very defensively reliable at center. So I don't think you need to move him away from the middle for that reason. But it does just kind of maybe reduce the mental load a little bit. Give him a little bit more freedom to look for his offensive moments. Put him in just, again, a different spot. Change things up. Change the look that he's getting, the looks that he is getting on the ice. And you put him with a capable defensive guy, a reliable guy, a good forechecker in Elias Lindholm, physical player. We've seen how Lindholm really, really good at throwing the body, at pinning guys to the board in these playoffs. Maybe he can open up a little bit of space for Elias Pettersson. And you know what? He's got a lot more finish. A lot more finish. It's a low bar, but a lot more finish than Ilya Mikheyev. Lindholm actually has a chance to finish a scoring chance or two if Elias Pettersson is able to set him up tonight. So I think this makes a ton of sense. I think if you are going to do the lineup shuffle going into Game 5, the best version of it is something very, very close to this. The fourth line, Phil DiGiuseppe, Nils Åman, Vasily Podkolzin. We'll see how much they trust Nils Åman out there. I think it's a lot easier to do this in Game 5 at home when you control the matchups, when you have last change. I would expect to see pretty limited minutes for that group. Obviously, Åman and PDG will contribute on the penalty kill. Podkolzin, great opportunity for him, but again, I'm expecting a pretty limited role. With Blueger off the fourth line, I think that reduces the trust element that Rick Tocchet's going to have there, and it's going to be up to the three top lines, the top nine, to really carry the load, to really play the bulk of the minutes for the Vancouver Canucks. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll just get some vibe check chance in here, or tech chance. Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about Halford and Bruff in a second. Get some vibe check text in here first. This one, hey, it's Jake from Calgary. I'm not nervous for this game. I'm quietly confident after seeing the changes, and I have faith, and the faith I have in Coach and the cult he's built. And that's a great point, right? This is a big test to see just kind of what response we get after this team was called out by the coach. And they were called out quite flatly, pretty bluntly, pretty directly. They were called out by the coach in Game 4. As we talked about, or after Game 4. As we talked about yesterday, typically when Rick Tocchet has done this, when he has really, you know, pushed the envelope in terms of his criticisms of the team, he's gotten the response he's looking for. And I don't buy the idea that there's this comparison between Rick Tocchet and kind of the old school hard ass coaches like John Tortorella or Daryl Sutter or Mike Babcock or anything like that. Rick Tocchet is so much smarter about the way he goes about it. I don't think there's any risk at all, certainly right now in this instance, of him, of the guys tuning him out or him losing the room or anything like this. I think Rick Tocchet is very, very savvy about when he goes to this kind of, when he plays this type of card, how often he does it. And I think he also puts in the work beyond these times to really build the relationships to make it count when he does it. But this is a big test, right? It's one thing to challenge your team in the middle of the regular season. It's one thing to challenge them, you know, early in the season when you come out flat against the Flyers. It's another thing to for the team to find that adequate response in a big, big, pivotal Game 5 against the Edmonton Oilers in the second round as the Stanley Cup playoffs. Brandon Vancouver says, I really don't know what's going to happen tonight. Feels like a 50-50. Somebody else texts in, I'm nervous as hell Imran in Richmond says, I don't know why, but I feel better about the game after seeing today's line rushes. And I think that's part of it, right? Just, again, change something up. Give fans, but more importantly, the players, a reason to think, okay, we're going to see something different tonight. We've been put in a position to do something different than we did last night. I think that's a huge part of this shuffle. A lot of it has to do with Elias Pettersson, obviously, but just in general, change things up, give the team a reason to get in that better mind state going into this game. And I do think a huge part of this one is going to be, you know, Rick Tocchet had the quote yesterday, right? He's swinging the bat. He's going to go down swinging. And that's not the first time Rick Tocchet has used that analogy, even going back to early in his tenure. That's what he believes in. And that's kind of what I want to see from the Canucks tonight as well. Look, their backs aren't against the wall, so they're not going down in any way tonight, right? Their season will not end tonight, no matter what happens. But I just think they need to attack and stay on the attack for as long as possible. Feed off that emotion early in the game from the crowd. But they've spent so much time, especially after game one, so much time in the last three games defending. And it's hard to do. And it's easy to fall into that mindset of, man, we're just holding on. This is going to go poorly. We just got to get it off the glass and out. You have so little left in the tank to attack. And I get that because it's McDavid, it's Draisaitl, you know how dangerous they are. It's hard to really commit to going on the attack yourself because you're worried about the puck going the other way. I completely understand that, but I think you got to take some swings offensively here. You can't be so worried about slowing down McDavid and Draisaitl that you neuter your own offense. So I need to see the Canucks get in on the attack, take their cues from Rick Tocchet, go down swinging, go down aggressively. If you are going to go down, get in the offensive zone, spend as much time as there, pepper Calvin Pickard with some shots, and at least put your best foot forward in that way. All right, speaking of putting your best foot forward, so Elias Pettersson, you might have heard the topic of quite a bit of conversation, not just from us, not just from fans, from Rick Tocchet, from Elias Pettersson himself yesterday, talking to the media, seeming very, very dejected, let's say, in a tough spot. Understandably so. I think this is a very competitive guy who is clearly not having anything close to the impact that he wants to have for his team in big spots right now. Now, as you know, Jason Brough on the morning show has been frequently very critical of Elias Pettersson and what he's seen from Elias Pettersson this year. But Halford and Brough on the morning show trying to spark some ideas for how to turn things around for Elias Pettersson. And of course, earlier this year, or it was last year, actually, in Major League Baseball, Trey Turner with Philadelphia Phillies, big free agent signing, really, really, really struggling. And the sports radio station there in Philly, one of the producers had the idea to, okay, instead of being classic Philly fans and ripping this guy who just signed this massive free agent deal and booing him every chance we get, what if we tried aggressively, proactively supporting him and seeing if it could boost his confidence? And you know what? It did just that. Trey Turner caught fire, ended up having a really good season from that point on. So Halford and Brough, they're trying to capture a little bit of that energy for Elias Pettersson tonight. Now, he's not a free agent signing, but he did just sign that big deal. And hey, much like Philly fans, Canucks fans, when you sign that big deal, there's that level of expectations. And I think what Halford and Brough are talking about here, and I'll play the clip in just a second, trying to preempt that, trying to show some loud vocal support for Elias Pettersson during the game, but maybe even more importantly, pre-game. Here's Halford and Brough talking about today on the morning show.
Okay, guys, let's get some energy here, and this is what it's going to be like. Let's go, Petey. Let's go, Petey. Okay, you guys are going to need to chant, too. You can't just clap along, right? Okay. Let's go, Petey. There we go. Okay, guys, like this needs to happen.
Okay.
We've given the example for the fans. They can follow this. Mm-hmm. Let's get this going. Think about what that would do for the reputation, too, of Canucks fans. There's a lot of people talking about how brutal Canucks fans are. There were a lot of people talking about how brutal Phillies fans were. Philadelphia sports fans in general. We have the potential to learn from Philadelphia in this situation.
Never been said before.
And again, if it doesn't work, we got nothing to lose
well,
from
at
this.
At least we tried.
Can you imagine the story? If before the game tonight, the chants start, let's go Petey, in the warm-up. They carry on to the national anthem, right? Only one anthem before you're hearing Let's Go PD. It's ringing out through the building. Imagine that. Okay? We have the ability to make this happen. So all the listeners that are listening right now, use your social media, go on to Reddit. A-Dog, I know you're a Redditor.
Patterson, not,
he admits this in
Patterson
public,
turns
though.
It over to McDavid. No, nothing Oilers 15 seconds in.
Dang, oh, it. God, this is backfired again.
Talk it makes him a healthy scratch.
DeSmith is like, well, you know how it feels.
The hashtag will be hashtag LGP. Let's go, Petey.
Okay.
LGP. And we'll get it out there. We'll try it. We'll ask.
I'll post the video right
we'll
now.
We'll ask the rest okay. of the shows. Watch, we're probably going to be airing the Jays game after this. But we'll ask the rest of the shows. We'll try and get it going.
All right, Halford, you ask. I'm delivering. You asked for the rest of the shows. You didn't need to ask, by the way. We're not idiots here. We're going to play the clip. We're going to talk about it, guys. But Halford and Brough, laying down the gauntlet for Canucks fans. That's what they want to hear at the building tonight. Let's go, Petey. Now, I've seen it taken off already a little bit on social media. I'm not on Reddit. I can't speak to that. Halford tried to say the hashtag would be LGP. I'm seeing much more hashtag Let's Go, Petey. So people just completely disregarding Halford there, which is absolutely all right. But that is the challenge from Halford and Brough. And you're going to hear that clip a lot on the station today. We're putting our weight behind it. I think it's a great idea. At this point, and I know they're bringing up the Casey DeSmith example, and that didn't work out as people expected against the Nashville Predators, even though they went on to win the series. But why not try something different? Why not change things up a little bit? Why not show that vocal support if you're a Canucks fan? I think it's a great idea. And I got to say, like, sometimes people, right before we go on the air, will text in, like, hey, guys, I'm fired up for the show. Have a great show. And you know what? It makes me feel nice. It's good. It's nice to have people supporting you before you do your job, cheering you on. So why not try it for Elias Pettersson? He's in a tough spot. We all understand that. And there'll be time in the summer for hindsight and looking back and criticism and speculation and all of that. But right now, this is a best of three series between the Canucks and the Oilers. And if Pettersson has a breakout, if Pettersson finds his game, that could easily be the decisive factor in this series. If there's anything the fans can do to give him even like a 1% more chance at finding his game, finding that moment, then you got to take that shot. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. A couple more vibe check texts here before we take a break. This one, Johnny from Kelowna says, no being nervous here. We are the underdogs. Play free. I think that's a very, very fair point of view to have on this one. Again, that kind of gets back to the, if you told people in September that they'd be here, everyone would have been over the moon doing cartwheels like they're an agent whose player is playing well in the playoffs. That's what they would have been doing. So embrace this moment. Yeah, you could have been up 3-1 if you play better in game four. Sure. But you're here, you're in a best 2 out of 3 with home ice advantage. Again, these are the big time games that we've been desperately missing for the last decade plus in this city. We've got one tonight. Rick Tocchet is rearranging the puzzle. Halford and Brough for firing up the fans before the game. It should be an awesome one tonight. Lots more coverage, of course, coming up here on Canucks Talk of this one. Previews, all of that. We will hear from Rick Tocchet at some point during the show. Drancer will join at noon. And I'll talk to one of our favorites here on the program, Shayna Goldman. She covers the NHL for The Athletic. Talk about this series, the other three series happening as well. All of them going long. All of them going to at least game 6, which is great to see in the second round. So we'll talk about that next. Shayna Goldman here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. Drance will be on the show at noon, getting you set up for Game 5 tonight between the Canucks and the Oilers at Rogers Arena. Series tied at 2. This is a big one. I'm live from the Kintech studio here. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. As mentioned, now joining me to talk about the Canucks and the Oilers and the rest of the Stanley Cup playoffs from the Too Many Men podcast, also covering the NHL for The Athletic, of course, she is Shayna Goldman. Shayna, thanks for doing this as always. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. So as I was saying, you know, big game five tonight between the Oilers and the Canucks. And, you know, what's just kind of your overall sense of how this series has gone? What stood out to you watching the first four games of this one so far?
It kind of feels like you get a gist of like who the better team is pretty quickly in each game. And I know it's like, okay, Captain Obvious, but sometimes like there's so many ebbs and flows in games and different momentum swings. I feel like you go into each game and you're like, wow, the Canucks are owning this, or wow, the Oilers are owning this. So it's like, as long as they don't screw it up, you kind of have a, you can kind of predict who's going to win each game, which sounds kind of boring, but like, it's actually, I don't know, to me, it's been really fun. Like game four, you look at it and go, wow, the Oilers are the better team. And like the Canucks almost spoiled it.
Yep.
So you're getting that different momentum swing, I feel like, each one, which is making for an interesting series that I'm saying like, hey, if this goes 6 or 7, well, it has to at this point. But if it goes 7, like, I'm not complaining. I know fans feel otherwise. But to me, each game so far, really, that the Canucks have played in the playoffs, I'm like, I'm interested. I'm intrigued for a different reason or another.
Yeah, and they've been all close, right? Like, I don't know if they've been – I think they've had one game that wasn't one goal. But even that, now that I say that, I'm skeptical that I said it. It's been a lot of one-goal games either way for this team in the playoffs. And now, one of the interesting things is the games have been so close, but the Oilers have also, especially in the last couple of games, and even going back to Game 2 at Rogers Arena, they've spent a lot of time attacking in Vancouver's zone. And when I think when the Canucks were going the other way and shooting on Stuart Skinner, that was one thing, right? Because they were able to get so many pucks past him and with relatively limited shot quantity. With Calvin Pickard in, you know, he did a much better job of limiting the bleeding for Edmonton in the last game. So it kind of feels like the Canucks are going to have to find a way to spend more time to kind of untilt the ice a little bit here against the Oilers. What do you see as kind of their best bets, whether it's, you know, personnel, tactics, whatever it is? What are their kind of best bets to just keep the run of play a little bit more even, which I know is easier said than done when the other team's running McDavid and Draisaitl out there consistently?
I think that they obviously have to target the weak points on Vancouver and on Edmonton, sorry. And we know what they are, right? Like the Oilers have made their adjustments. Calvin Pickard is a weak point. If you can pepper him with shots, you're going to have a better chance. And then you look at it defensively and go, okay, who are the weak points there? It's CeCe and Nurse. The problem for the Canucks now is that they're on two separate pairs, because when they were together, that they feasted on that pair, right? They had less than 20% of the expected goal share through three games. They were getting outscored. What was it? 5-1 if I'm not mistaken. They were dreadful. We saw Nurse have a nice bounce back game in game four. I think the Oilers had like 75% of the expected goal share in his minutes, which great, wonderful. They haven't seen that at all this postseason, but CeCe still struggled. So that's definitely going to be a matchup to watch to get themselves going. But on the other hand, you know, you can't just, it's not just about targeting the Oilers. You have to make adjustments yourself. The biggest one, and it's, again, thank you, Captain Obvious, is going to be getting your best player going. I cannot believe he's not injured per Rick Talkett, but to me, Pettersson doesn't look right. In round one, there was that hesitation to shoot. Some of the shots didn't have enough, like, oomph behind them. He looked better at the end of that series, and I thought, like, okay, maybe now he's going to get going. To me, he's still not visible enough. I wonder if you get to a certain point where you go, he needs help on his line. He needs someone to get him. And obviously, you don't want the player that you expect to be at the top of your lineup to be your, you know, driver, to be everything, to need a spark. But if he does, he does. So you need to find a way to get him going. I wonder if moving Garland up to play with him a little bit more would work, because I kind of liked how they looked together at the end of the season. And Garland's been bringing a lot of energy, and you don't want to disrupt that third line, but maybe give that a shot. Maybe just try to get a jolt, because once he's going, I think the Canucks will have that trickle-down effect through their whole lineup, right?
Yeah, you'd certainly think so. And I mean, I can tell you, we have come at this Pettersson thing from every angle. And you're exactly right that you saw it felt like signs of progress at the end of the Nashville series. And then even, you know, game two against the Oilers, he opens the scoring with a power play goal. And you kind of thought, okay, monkey off the back. Here he comes. Is the dam about to burst? And then it's been kind of two no-shows in the next games in this series. Now, to your point about mixing things up in a new lineup look, Rick Tocchet rolled that out just a little while ago at the morning skate for the Canucks, and it's Elias Pettersson's going to be moving to the wing, playing with Elias Lindholm and Nils Höglander, who comes back in. So a couple interesting things there. One, right, you know, Höglander coming back in, Lindholm obviously a lot more finishing capability than Ilya Mikheyev or Sam Lafferty, but moving Pettersson to the wing, it's a fascinating one to me. On the one hand, I think of Pettersson as he's such a cerebral player, right? And so putting him in the middle of the ice gives him the most opportunity to kind of dictate the pace and control the game. But I also wonder if at this point, just reducing his workload, reducing his mental strain and maybe his defensive responsibility a little bit is the best option to get him going.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we can look at it, too, and we go, sometimes centers could use that reset. You can go through a million different things. And a lot of the times it has to do with young players, right? Because we hear young players can't handle the defensive responsibility and have to learn how to play on the wing. But I remember, like, years ago, really, like, digging up different players who had shifted from center to wing to reset their game. Guys like David Krejci did it. Guys like Tyler Seguin did it. It's not necessarily an insult. It might just kind of help you. Obviously, you have to think about the game a little bit different. So look at Leon Draisaitl right now. Yes, he's playing with Connor McDavid, so we're cheating a little bit, but he's not 100% health-wise. And they go, okay, let's take a little off his workload and watch him cook in this series. And it's working. So why not? The other part about this that I don't hate is Elias Lindholm. First of all, you know that you have Dakota Joshua to center that line, no problem. You have Bluer to play center if you need him to move up. But you have a lot of forwards you can shift around the lineup and have that versatility. Great thing to have. Elias Lindholm at his best is a shooter, you know, if you think of him from an offensive standpoint. Mm-hmm. We've all been kind of waiting for him to really break out in Vancouver, and he's had good moments, especially in the playoffs, but he's a great shot. He pairs really well with a playmaker. If Pettersson doesn't want to shoot the puck, if there's something going on with that and we see him deferring to passing, why not ensure that he has someone who has the finishing talent? Maybe it's something that can click for both of them. I don't hate it. I think you're also adding a little more energy. Like, I like Nils Höglander on that top line with him better than Mikheyev. So
yep.
It's not the worst move.
Yeah, it is. Again, I was talking about it yesterday. Like, Mikheyev, I think it's one goal in 60 games now. It looks like he's going to be a healthy scratch tonight, and it's kind of hard to argue against it with that track record. And, you know, the other thing is, so they keep Miller with Suter and Besser, and we've seen them typically be playing the most minutes against McDavid's line and, you know, at least surviving in those minutes. Bluger moves up to play with Joshua and Garland, and maybe not your classic matchup type line, but I think Rick Tocchet trusts them to maybe be out there with against Leon Draisaitl tonight, and then should theoretically open up Lindholm, Pettersson, and Höglander to, as you say, kind of attack the soft underbelly of the Oilers roster, get those more appealing matchup minutes tonight, especially on home ice with Rick Tocchet controlling last change.
Yeah, exactly. And look, that third line put together, is it the most traditional shutdown line? No, but is it a good one? Absolutely. Like, yeah. Bluger is a great defensive player. Joshua has a little bit of versatility. Garland has that spark and energy that he brings, and that pesky energy that, I mean, it's fun to watch, but you look at them in the regular season, and if I remember right, they outscored their opponents by a pretty good margin in their minutes, and it was a big sample. It wasn't just, oh, they're hot start, and then it fizzled out. Like, they were consistently good as a third line. I think at points in the season, we were wondering, are they one of the better third lines around the league? Because they kept clicking, they had the scoring, and they had the numbers below the surface, really on both ends of the ice, to keep it going. So it's not bad, right? And that's what works about this lineup compared to some other teams. Like, they have so many different combinations at their disposal, so why not go for it? And while you're mixing and matching that top line, your second line, you know, works together, and, you know, they've been producing enough. And that third line, you knew, was reliable in the regular season. Like, why not go with it?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right, by the way. Bluger, Joshua, and Garland were dynamite in the regular season. Outscored their opponents by a ton. I mean, Bluger was on like a 15-game point streak or something at one point. It's like, that's not Teddy Bluger's game usually, but they were having that type of success in the regular season. On the blue line for the Canucks, how concerned are you about the lack of impact, the lack of production that we're seeing from Filip Hronek?
A little bit, but I mean, like, that was kind of the whole second half of the regular season, right?
Yep.
And I like him in Vancouver because he's the best partner that Quinn Hughes has ever had, but that bar is pretty low. But on the other hand, I look at it and I look back to the trade, and I think some people questioned why the Red Wings did it. And they were like, hey, this scoring streak that he's having this year, we don't find sustainable and we're not paying him for it. Like, that was the vibe I got from it. And I was like, oh, there it is, rearing its head at the worst time. I think if your forward group isn't clicking as much, and we've seen that be the problem for the Canucks, you need your blue line to step up, right? And you want to have contributions from everybody. But to some extent with this defense, I'm not as concerned about them offensively if the forwards are going, and if they're fine in their own zone, which is asking for a lot for some of them. Yep. Like Ian Cole has gone through the postseason. So maybe control that first, and then we can think offense, right? And like sometimes in today's game, good defense is just holding the puck and controlling play, even if you're not scoring, right? And that would be great. I don't know if that's exactly how this blue line's built to play. I think the forward group is the one that's going to take that burden, and the defense is just more of a support, except for Quinn Hughes, obviously. So if they can just provide that support and not be as bad defensively and not, I don't know, literally score goals on their own goaltender, then maybe we can talk about offense on the other end of the ice. I would say that's going to be a stepping stone process for them.
Yeah, poor Ian Cole, man. And especially because, like, famously the most playoff experience on the Canucks, Stanley Cup winner, right? All of those things. Like, and then it's like, oh, man, it's just not going well. But, hey, he's going to stay in the lineup tonight. And I think at a certain point, you just have to bet on Ian Cole with all of that playoff experience bouncing back a little bit at some point in this series. All right, I want to ask you about some of the other series happening as well. And, of course, Colorado extends their series with the Dallas Stars. That'll go at least to 6 games. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of said the writing was on the wall when it was 3-1 for Dallas. And then, of course, you know, with the news of Colorado losing Valerie Nichushkin long-term as well. Does Colorado have the horses, have the power here to extend this series, to push it to Game 7?
Against any other team, I would probably say yes. Against the Dallas Stars, I'm not so sure. The wrinkle in it now is the Rupe Hintz injury, which I think is really as deep as the Stars are, that's going to be a tough blow. And we haven't heard anything about Sagan after blocking that shot last night. So those would be my two big question marks. And that's kind of the opening for Colorado. The big thing was that the big dogs came to play last night, right? Like, Cale Makar has not had a great series. It's very rare to say that. And you look at his whole regular season and the scoring's there. It like, no notes. Impeccable scoring, right? But the play below the surface wasn't to his usual standards. And it's a high bar to meet. You know, it's like, I know we might be judging him on a different scale, but it's because he has that elite skill set. Like, sorry, that's the way it works when you're one of the best defensemen in the league, but it wasn't his, you know, usual capacity. And that's been the case in the playoffs so far. So the fact that he had a good game, I think, is pretty huge for Colorado to have a shot in this. And obviously Nathan MacKinnon's scoring was big, and players like Lehkonen stepping up, who are the exact type of players you need the Middlestats and the Lehkonens to step up without Nichushkin. I can see them forcing 7. I would be very shocked if the Stars lost 3 straight, but I'm here for it becoming a series, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and especially, I mean, I think there was a lot of hype for this series going into it, right? So when it looked like it was going to be maybe a 5-gamer, that would have been pretty disappointing. But, you know, big credit to the Avalanche for pushing back, at least getting it to 6 here. And like you said, we awesome to see it go 7. The Rupe Hintz injury day-to-day, we're hearing, right? But his status, obviously so vital to the Dallas Stars. How much of a concern is that, not just for the series against Colorado, but for the next series, maybe the next 2 series for Dallas with Stanley Cup aspirations?
Oh my God, it's huge, because this is one of your most important players, right? Like, it's any injury is going to be tough to manage in the playoffs. Everyone has to deal with them, and it's different varieties, and it depends on your depth and everything like that. But when it's someone as pivotal as that, it's really tough. Maybe you can get through a series, but it's moving on from there. It's big picture. I'm sure we're not going to know any news until, like, someone's like, actually on the ice and actually back in the lineup, because that's the nature of the playoffs. So you have to plan both ways, right? Like, you need that security net of, like, hey, we know what to do if we don't get anyone back, and hey, we know what to do if we do. But it's just going to be a test for everyone else. And it's interesting because this Stars team, you could look at it and go, well, maybe they need a little adversity. They were up 3-1, but it's like, didn't they get enough of that in the first round?
Yeah.
Didn't they get through their adversity and then blowing a 3-goal lead in game one and almost doing that again in game two? And they were like, wait, nope, we got to stop the bleeding. So how many more curveballs are we throwing at the Dallas Stars? And if they keep crushing them, I guess maybe we have to give them even more credit.
Yeah, you want just a little bit of adversity. You don't want just like adversity after adversity after adversity. It's like, no, that's too much. Stop. We just, it was some easy stuff would be nice here at a certain point. Okay, other game on the schedule. I'll ask you this before we let you go. Speaking of pushing a series long, potentially pushing it to 7 games, game 6 between the Rangers and the Hurricanes. Hurricanes down 3-0. Now they're back at home playing game 6. They're favored to win this one. Can they complete the miracle comeback? I know I don't want to get ahead of myself with this one tonight, but can they do this? Can they rally back from 3-0 and knock off the Rangers?
I think it's hard. It's like such a chaotic league and we never know what's going to happen and you can't count anyone out. 3-0 comebacks are really hard to come by. Yes. We've seen a lot of 3-1s, but 3-0 is a lot. But if they do, it's going to be them beating the Rangers and the Rangers beating themselves to an extent. Game 5 was not the Rangers' best. Game 4, you really saw some defensive lapses, and they found a way to swarm like the Panarin line and really target them and slow them down when that's the Rangers' best scoring combination. And there's definite holes on defense for New York, so if Carolina's power play can get going, because the 5-on-5 game is close, and I think both teams, it's getting closer as the series goes on, honestly. If they can figure out their power play and stop the Rangers' penalty kill from, like, sucking all their momentum away every time they go to a special team situation, then they're in really good shape because already they've slowed down the Rangers' power play, which I think we all expected, right? The Canes are one of the best penalty-killing teams in the league, and we saw that in Game 5 a lot. Like, the Rangers' power play did not look nearly as lethal. They weren't even getting set in formation much before the Canes would just clear it out. So there's definite like openings for them. If I'm the Rangers, like, of course you want to end the series sooner than later, but I would be legitimately concerned if this goes 7.
Yeah, that is not a comfortable spot to be in for any team when you're up 3-0 and all of a sudden you're talking about blowing game 7 at home potentially and the ramifications from that. Shayna, great stuff. Appreciate the insight. Enjoy the games tonight. I'm sure we'll chat again soon.
Thanks for having me.
That is Shayna Goldman from the Too Many Men podcast, also covering the NHL for The Athletic, joining us here and weighing in on all things Stanley Cup playoffs and her perspective about Elias Pettersson, this Oilers Canucks series in general. But yeah, just talking about the track record of sometimes when a center is going through it, like Elias Pettersson is, that shift to the wing, you don't have to interpret it as an insult or a lack of faith from the coach. It's just a reset, just an opportunity to attack the game from a different angle, as I said, to get some different looks out there and hope that gives you enough of a shakeup to get things going in your direction. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one comes in from Chris on Vancouver Island. I'm optimistic about the impact the line changes for game 5 could have. If we can roll 3 lines, I think our opportunities will come. And he says, hashtag let's go Petey. So Chris is on the Halbro chant bandwagon. And I think that point that Chris makes about rolling 3 lines is going to be really, really important for a couple of reasons, right? Because we've really only seen 2 lines, not that they've had territorial success, but at least they've been able to chip in offensively. Really only 2 lines consistently through this playoffs, let alone in the series against the Oilers. If you're going to spend a significant chunk of time in the Oilers' end of the ice, it can't really be a 2-line thing. It's got to be at least 3 lines that are capable of doing that. And the configuration that Tocchet is rolling out there now, you would have loved if Pettersson, Hoglander, and Mikheyev could have found a way to do it on their own. They just weren't. It wasn't happening, right? Pettersson, Mikheyev, and whoever. It wasn't happening. So you had to change something up with Lindholm there. Hasn't necessarily had that play-driving impact that the Canucks would have wanted him to have when they made that trade. But maybe the pairing of Elias Pettersson, moving Pettersson to wing, can give you that ability to play in Edmonton's zone, play in the offensive zone, keep the puck away from McDavid and Draisaitl for as long as you can. You're going to need the 3 top lines to be able to do that if they're going to have the type of success they need in Game 5 tonight. And I think it's also instructive to think of it as 3 lines because, again, 4th line of Neil Zaman between Phil DiGiuseppe and Vasily Podkolzin, I would expect very, very limited usage. It's one thing when Teddy Bluger's your 4th line center, and we know the trust that Tocchet rightfully has in Teddy Bluger, and Sam Lafferty is there. Not that Sam Lafferty's had a great playoffs. You know, Phil DiGiuseppe he trusts. it's easy to put those guys out there in a bunch of different situations. With Pod Colson, with Neil Zaman, I'm not sure there's the same level of trust. So I think you're going to see significant minutes for the top three lines, very limited minutes, especially 5-on-5. Oman and Phil DiGiuseppe will get theirs on the penalty kill. But Tockett's loading up the top three lines for a reason. He's going to need them to do really, really significant work tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. Keep those thoughts coming in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And I did want to mention just one thing here quickly before we go to break. Johnny in Kelowna texts in. Not sure if you guys have talked about Dutchie yet. TSN just did a great tribute. So many memories listening to his highlight packs over the years. And you've probably seen by now, of course, longtime SportsCenter anchor over on TSN, Darren Detition, passing away today. TSN shared the news. And look, we all know there's a Sportsnet TSN rivalry, but that all goes out the window when you're talking about something like this. If you're like me, you grew up watching a ton of highlight shows all the time, every day on Sportsnet, on TSN. And Darren Detition was a huge part of that. And Darren, you know, we talked about it when Don Taylor was inducted in the BC Sports Hall of Fame, how important he was on Sports Page, on Sportsnet, just that bond that the person doing the highlights and the energy they bring and the passion they bring can create with the viewers, right? How it fosters your love of sports. And Detition was the same thing. Exceptional at his job, absolute fixture on our TVs for decades. Always a pleasure to watch. Always a pleasure to sit down and enjoy his work. So my condolences to Darren Detition's family, his friends, his colleagues as well. Of course, I never had the chance to meet him, but you're hearing just endless positive things about Darren Detition today, about the people who did get a chance to work with him, what he meant, and the way he went about his business. So again, condolences and RIP to a fantastic broadcaster and, by all accounts, a great person as well. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Somebody says, can we recap the changes in a report fashion once in a while? I'll do that right now for you. Here are the lineup changes. Here's the lineup that the Canucks went with at morning skate and seem poised to play with tonight in Game 5 against the Edmonton Oilers. Miller line stays the same with Suter and Besser. Blueger back skating between Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland. Elias Lindholm slides down to play with Nils Höglander and Elias Pettersson on his wing. Neil Zaman is centering the fourth line with Phil DiGiuseppe and Vasily Podkolzin. That means Linus Karlsson, Ilya Mikheyev, Sam Lafferty, all healthy scratches, all coming out of the lineup from Game 4. On the blue line, Quinn Hughes, Filip Hronek, Carson Soucy, Tyler Myers, Nikita Zadorov, Ian Cole, Friedman and Juulsen going to be the healthy scratches. So Soucy comes back after a one-game suspension. Noah Juulsen is out. Archer Shelovs and Casey DeSmith were your goalies. It's going to be Archer Shelovs in net tonight. There is your lineup report. Of course, we'll hit it again in the whiteboard with Drancer. Drancer set to join the show in the next segment. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll continue to look ahead to Game 5 between the Canucks and the Oilers here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.